Hello and welcome to the 10th episode of our podcast, A Global Perspective on European Politics.
In today's episode, we will zoom in on one of the countries that is arguably most affected by the Russian-Ukrainian war, Poland. How does this war affect Polish foreign policy, and how do Polish people feel about the Russian threat? And is this war also somehow convenient for the Polish government? All these questions and more we are going to discuss today, and my name is Tom Wagenmakers.
And I'm Jo Volkert.
And I'm very happy to introduce you to our guest, Michał Jakuński, who is a professor in political communication at the University of Wrocław in Poland, and he's also my PhD supervisor, and Artur Gruszak, professor of political science and chair of national security at the Faculty of International and Political Studies at the Jagielloński University in Poland. Michał, Artur, welcome.
Yeah, I would just start with the first question, and that is more a general question to get a bit into the topic. Well, Poland has long been one of the hawks in the EU and NATO policy regarding Russia, and we were wondering if you could explain why this is the case and what is the reason for Poland's stance in this regard. Yeah, maybe Professor Gruszak, if you want to give a bit of an answer to that question, that'd be lovely.
I wouldn't say that Poland was so hawkish in the NATO and the EU. For some obvious reasons, in the last 3 years, the ruling party and the current government has not been very active in the EU's policy, well, foreign security policy, because of obvious reasons, because of the rule of law issue, and because of tensions with the major EU powers. When it comes to NATO, Poland just bet on alliance with the US. So again, this deterioration in relations with the major EU countries was compensated by cooperation with the US, especially under the Trump administration. So I would say that Poland was realistic with regard to Russia. And moreover, it sought to deny a sort of relativist attitude towards Russia, which I called yes, but this. The EU, the European Commission, and the major member states were used to say that, well, Russia is a problem for international security, but actually it's not a grave problem. We have more problems like climate change, like energy security, like migration, etc. Well, was Russia an aggressor and at the state practicing violence in the international relations? Well, yes, but it was not so dangerous. It's just part of Ukraine. So rather, let's develop the cooperation with Russia on business as usual basis. So Poland has been warning against keeping Russia as a reliable partner, as a member of a European security system. However, after the events in the first and the second decades, especially both internal and international actions by the Kremlin and the Putin, was more and more delusional to see Russia as a reliable partner, especially after the famous Putin's speech to the Munich Security Conference in 2007, and then Russian aggression to Georgia, Ukraine, etc. So Poland was very sensitive on just tolerating Russia's aggressive steps and seeing them as if nothing happened and as something which is temporary and will not shake the solid fundamentals of EU-Russia economic political cooperation.
All right, thank you very much. But then if we look at the current conflict regards the EU, do you think that now this has changed, right? Because many people say that there is a shift happening, right? That the EU is now going to be a defensive bloc. All these things that are going to change. Do you think that that is more or less of a confirmation of Polish view, or do you think that the EU is taking a different stance?
Well, I think both. Firstly, that's sheer confirmation that Polish concerns and these warnings were well-founded and were based on reliable assessments and some, let's say, future-oriented vision of threats and risks. And, well, as a direct reaction to that, the EU has changed this overall policy towards Russia. But, well, now it's still in the progress. I mean, we have to to wait for some next events and developments to come to see how these new elements, especially stronger sanctions and also a cause for a new common security and defense policy and the building of, so to say, European army would be implemented. Well, there is a strategic compass which sets a new guidelines for the EU defense. But, well, so far so good, we can say. Regardless of the developments in Ukraine, well, we know that the sanctions are more or less porous. They are selected, and military assistance is reaching Ukraine slowly, partly due to technical and preparatory issues. It's new systems of weapons must have a proper technical staff, and also it requires training, etc. It's too slow and just below expectations by Ukraine. But I would say the tendency is clear. And maybe it's still this enthusiasm to be more involved in assistance to Ukraine. But again, the EU is facing a sort of fatigue with the Ukraine conflict, and we will see next weeks, I think, if not months, some of the months, how the developments in Ukraine will affect EU's policy.
Well, thank you very much for your insight. We were also just more generally wondering, so Poland seems to be very connected to Ukraine in multiple regards. And of course, there are historical ties between the countries. But besides history, why is Poland so connected to Ukraine, and how does this connection also influences Poland's role and position in regards to the Ukrainian conflict? Professor Jakunski, can you answer that question for us maybe and give your opinion?
I'll try to. Well, I'm not sure if I am to refer to the previous questions, if I may just say a few sentences about this, and then I'll return to the recent question. So this perspective of Poland as a hawk in the EU or in NATO, well, I'd say that from my perspective, it's also an impression, perhaps because of domestic politics after the shift of government in 2015. Well, the current government tried to pose like as if it was like stronger domestically and internationally with different means. So, but as Professor Gruszek said, well, when it comes to policy outcomes, it's not that evident. When it comes to like the impression internally or domestically, well, they try to pose or create this kind of an image, right? But when it comes to policy outputs, it's not that efficient, I would say. When it comes to NATO, well, the historical, I mean, from 21st century, mainly historical observations of conflicts or regions that were unstable in Georgia or in Moldova or in Ukraine, well, I think that Polish decision makers and Polish military was trying to open eyes or open eyes of Western partners like more widely to things that are sensitive to our national security. But of course, the main partner, the military partner, the US, has also played a role. So when it comes to Polish policy with such a big global partner, it's difficult to say that, well, we'll have an impact on something. We can like put some accents or increase some insights to partners like in NATO, but I wouldn't say that this is a decisive role. When it comes to other question you raised, well, Poland was the first country to recognize Ukraine on the international stage. So it's not only because historical reason, it was because political strategy, because of the foundation of the big country that is a nation, not only country, but nation, that is a natural buffer to big Russia. And that's a strategical reason why Poland is still on the side of Ukraine, and it's been standing there for more than 30 years now. And it was irrelevant whether at Ukraine you had like more like pro-East or pro-Russia government or president. Well, it was like the interest of the country of Poland to sustain independent Ukraine, and this is like something strategic, and it hasn't changed. Now, well, it changed in this aspect that, well, we support the Ukraine in its like efforts to join like Western bloc, no matter when we think of the EU or the NATO or any other alliance. So to help bridging Ukraine with Western partners and its Polish interests. Apart from this, the economy, well, the second biggest nation neighboring Poland, so after, right after Germany, so economic ties and also like the social ties, not only because migration, but also we decided to open labor market quite early. So there were already hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians in Poland, not because of migration crisis, but earlier on. So these are the ties, so economic ties, social ties, political ties, and military ties. So a lot of ties.
Yeah, thank you very much. And that's also what I was interested in whether, because of all the labor, people from Ukraine that are working in Poland, whether there's also a more human aspect to it rather than just strategic.
Labor market is, if I may continue, is a sensitive thing. Of course, if the economy booms or is growing, then you invite people, you ask them to come, and everyone is happy. If you look at the UK, well, once the economy slowed down, well, all of a sudden, all the migrants from the, or perhaps not all, but part of the regions in the UK, well, they didn't want that much migrants from Eastern Europe, in particular from Romania, Poland, and so on and so forth. So you never know these days when you have like huge demand on labor force, everyone is happy. If you are facing an economic crisis, then things must go into worse direction. I hope this scenario is not going to happen, but based on Western countries, what happened in the Netherlands or in the UK, well, there might be some tensions between migrants, between political forces that, well, endorse migrants and those who are more like protecting economy and labor market for the, let's say, majority in that particular country.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's see. First, maybe Professor Gruszak, is there anything in the communication of the government towards the citizens, maybe before and right after the start of the war, that struck you as surprising? And then maybe afterwards we can ask Professor Jakunski for a more detailed insight on this.
Well, surprising, yes, to some extent. In a way that, well, of course, depending on what kind of media, I mean, what TV station or broadcasting stations are you choosing and are you preferring to listen to or to watch? Well, the public television or state-owned TV has been consistently supporting training course, which was natural, and was enhancing this, let's say, simple and clear message: we are with Ukraine, our solidarity is with the Ukrainian people, with the Ukrainian government, our authorities, especially the president and prime minister and the leader of the party, are doing all their best to help our neighbor being the victim of aggression, and of course blaming Russia, blaming Putin for every step that Russian operation or Russian troops participating in the operation were taken. That was a natural kind of strategic communication in military conflicts, especially given that Poland had been involved in assistance to Ukraine in military training, in some programs dedicated to public administration, to police, anti-corruption offices, etc. This message that Poland is obliged and is strongly dedicated to continue this support and this assistance was natural. And I would say that the public media did not differ much from commercial media, especially this the leading broadcasting stations, which usually compete with the public public broadcasting systems. But in this case of Ukraine, they were speaking rather in one voice. A second topic which was strongly explored and exploited in the media, it was war refugees and this forced migrations. And again, it was double picture or a sort of dual image of Ukrainian tragedy. Firstly, tragedy of Ukrainian people forced by Russian aggression. Secondly, heroism of the Polish nation, which was just accepting those fleeing from war in Ukraine. So this sort of reporting on refugee flows was strikingly different from the stories back in 2010, especially the migration crisis in the southern Europe. And the difference was that in that case, they were Muslims. Now we have, say, brothers from Ukraine, Slavs, Slavic people. Moreover, a lot of them relatives of those who already reside in Poland. Basically, the main message is that we are involved in support for Ukraine, and we will support and aid both the state and the Ukrainian forces, as well as Ukrainian people who are forced to flee from that country.
All right. Thank you very much. Professor Jakunski, what are your views on this? Do you agree with Professor Grushak?
Well, I mainly agree, but one has to remember that, well, we are still polarized society. So, well, you may think that, well, this crisis somehow united Poles or united the media or whatever you think, political elite, but I think that it's very, very temporal. So next year we have general elections, so those pictures... President in Kiev at Zelensky's place, or prime minister, and so on and so forth. Well, we'll see them next year in a political campaign, and these will not be pictures presented by opposition, but by the ruling party. So, and this, what is now not a conflict, it will be a conflict next year, and of course the ruling party will try to prove that they managed to cope with COVID crisis, with migration crisis, with humanitarian aid, and so on and so forth. And not only domestically they succeeded, but also they were welcomed in Brussels, in Kiev, and in Washington, and wherever place you think of, right? So that's one narration that will be continued, I presume, next year. But we are democracies, so we have also opposition parties, and they are like kind of, you know, it's difficult for them to say that something went wrong. But I think that not everything went good. So the first wave of migration was hosted and managed by local governments, not by the government itself, because perhaps they struggled with pandemic or never mind. But still, the efforts were not so visible, whereas efforts of people at the local community level, they were more visible. Now, the point is whether the government will be able to convince that it was vice versa. I'm not sure if they managed to do this, right? People know who greeted migrants at the railway station in Przemysl, southeastern Poland, who was organizing hundreds of thousands of volunteers. A government was kind of late with this. A question in here is, who is going to remember what happened in February or beginning of March and what is happening now? If they succeed in presenting this image of victorious political leaders of Poland, of the help, successful help that, I don't know, helped to protect Kiev and so on and so forth, that beginning of crisis might be overshadowed by the next steps undertaken by the government. That's my point. And when it comes to the media, again, they are highly polarized, but when it comes to broadcasting media, they were more like, perhaps not unanimous, but they were more like oriented to people, to crisis solution, not to a conflict, either political conflict between Poles or either with Russia. Russia in here is still enemy, no matter if you switch on public TV or private TV, everyone knows who is who in this conflict. And that somehow surprised me, but positively.
Do you think that the public opinion of most of the citizen aligns with this picture that is created in the media and the official picture as you have just presented it? Or do you think there's also a different picture if you were to go around and ask the people?
Well, if you follow forums or if you follow like some groups, chat groups or so, that's not that pink painted, I should say, right? So there are some, perhaps this is also a matter of Russian propaganda, that it's not so obvious that everyone will love Ukrainians and everybody will love President Zelensky and so on and so forth. It's not so simple. Now everybody is compassionate, but if you follow like not mainstream media or like this mainstream narration, if you follow like groups, different groups, you may see that there are some tensions that are now like kind of hidden. Every November we have like Independence Day, very patriotic day, and many like ordinary people, they show up with flags, but also it's a chance for nationals to show their patriotism, so to speak, patriotism. And well, I'm not sure how this year, for instance, it will be when you have like people manifesting their affiliation with Ukraine and so on and so forth, because this is not only about Ukraine from 2022, but people in Poland remember like historic times when, well, at Ukraine in during World War II, there were some massacres and there were some tragic moments in history. So I guess that it's difficult not to remember about this, and there'll be some voices that will be heard louder in coming months, I believe.
Yeah, very interesting. Thank you for that insight.
Yeah, maybe another interesting question would be, if we take again the perspective back to the Poland-EU relations, what I find interesting is that at this moment we're not hearing that much anymore about the issue of the independence of the Polish judges, right? This issue seems to have taken a backseat. So in this sense, would you say that that's kind of a nice convenience for Poland? Or, I mean, this issue will turn up again, right, Professor Gruszak?
War in Ukraine is a background for the next stage in the formation of relationship between Poland and in the EU in several dimensions or at several levels. The first is just the position of Poland in the EU, which has been marginalized, but because of the war in Ukraine, Poland just returned as an important actor. Whether so the frontline state, especially intermediary between some European capitals and Kiev, especially in the first weeks, and also transit area for both directions. I mean, aid for Ukraine, and also migration from Ukraine westwards. The second dimension is the will and wish to improve the image of Poland in the eyes of European citizens and some governments. It's more on the part of the Polish authorities than the intention of the European Commission, for instance. And nevertheless, the Polish authorities, especially the ruling Justice Party, counts on a sort of reward for this, so to say, sacrifice, as for this dedication to assistance to Ukraine and being involved in this huge conflict as a supporter of Ukraine. So where the government expects that the current sources of tensions and issues with the EU, with the European Commission, also with the Court of Justice, with the European Parliament, which is a rule of law, but also the climate policy, so this migration issues as well, will be just overcome or just overshadowed by the practical things to be done. However, it might be a false assumption, given that recently, okay, the Commission just shed the green light for recovery plan, but of course it depends on pursuing so-called milestones in this in the implementation of recovery plan, which is far from obvious to be fulfilled. And the last element is the improvement of diplomatic relations with the major EU member states, especially Germany, France, Spain, Italy, to some extent, some Benelux countries. Well, given that these relations deteriorated before the Russian aggression on Ukraine. But I will just give one example. In December 2021, Warsaw was hosting the so-called summit of European populist and far-right parties, and the Polish authorities were welcoming such figures as Marine Le Pen, Viktor Orban, Santiago Abascal. So, okay, you know, and then talking with Macron about long-term cooperation, it's, you know, it's not just reliable to be presented as partner or counterparty in EU politics. Nevertheless, it's still far from being successful, given the still concerns on the part of Berlin, Paris, or Madrid regarding the Polish internal affairs and all these matters that I already mentioned, that are contrary to EU policies and also contrary to the judgments of the Court of Justice, are still unresolved. So there are just a little hope that these relations will improve in the time to come.
So, but in general, you can say that Poland is for its own security policies, right? It's trying to make the best out of the crisis.
Yes, there is a will to capitalize on the current situation in a way of a sort of trade-off. We assist Ukraine, we absorb migrants, so we give them assistance, etc. So in return, we deserve a sort of understanding of our arguments when it comes to all these infringements and all these deficiencies that were already proven by EU institutions. So just use a sort of double standard for Poland. Don't punish us for all these violations and infringements, because we deserve respect, because we sacrifice ourselves in helping and assisting Ukraine. So we should get money from the EU budget, regardless of all these concerns and all these infringements that were already done and mentioned in European Parliament resolutions and in European Commission's report, etc.
If I may add, well, my perspective is also like similar. We were, by some of the countries, by some of the capitals of Europe, kind of deprived of the status of a equal partner. But on the other hand, Polish government has been stubborn, and well, there were some violations of rule of law, and it's again, we cannot forget about it in here just because of 3 months of a crisis. So It's been something serious, not based on ideological issues or double standard or whatsoever. Simply, the so-called reform of judicial reform was not a mistake, but it brought some violations of rule of law, and that's my standpoint. We cannot simply think of trade-offs and concessions that, well, we sacrifice ourselves, as Professor Gruszek said, and then, well, we ask you to, well, let's say, close one of your eyes and say, well, we'll give you the money for recovery and we'll give you the money for the migrants and so on and so forth. So I'm thinking of it in a longer perspective. So we'll have new financial framework in the EU, and we have to be aware that, well, it's not the success just to have the money, but to spend them in a good manner, solving some problems with development, with keeping up with more developed Western partners for innovation, and not only for the sustenance or sustainability of the ruling party or the solving migration crisis, because this is something more. So I should say that what I expect from government, no matter who this government constructs is the vision for next years. And truly, I haven't had this vision yet.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, I think this future outlook is a nice note to end our podcast on. Yeah,
I agree. So thank you very much, Professor Jakuntke and Professor Gruszak, for joining us today. And we'll see you in the next episode. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.